This is Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over, and Mr. Arthur Eastman has just started on the Milk War, the narrative of the Milk War, and he's just about finished putting in that hot water heater on Saturday the 16th of August, 69. Saturday the 16th of August, 69. This is the beginning of Channel 2 over. The beginning of Channel 2 over. Mr. Arthur Eastman has just started on the Milk War. And this is on Saturday the 16th of August, 69. He's just about to finish putting in that heater.
Sit right up and crawl right in under it. And I could just sit right there just like this, and that damn barrel would just slide down over me.
Yeah.
Well, I sat right there, and as usual, them troopers come back, they nailed the pickets on where I was. They didn't know, and they went looking around. Well, his truck's here, and his car's here, and he must be here someplace. Jesus, they went all through that house, you know, and Jesus, my wife couldn't stop them. You see, the state troopers up there, they have the road patrol and everything, just same as they do down here, and they also have the sheriff's department up there, see. And boy, they looked all over, and they couldn't find me. They come down, cellar down there, and they rattled the barrels. And everything. They thought, Jesus, maybe he might be in one of them barrels, one of them says. And Jesus, they looked all over the barrels, and by Jesus, they pushed against the one that I was in, and I never. They couldn't find me. They went out of there, you know. They're going to be alone. And they was going to take my wife down to the barracks down there, and about that time it had gotten noising around a little bit, and my wife used to write for the Syracuse Herald. Well, they had a field man down there in Oneida, and he come tearing up there, and he says to him, he says, well, you can't take her, he says, she writes for my paper, he says, and she's here looking out for my paper, and that's all to save her going. They were going to take her down. They couldn't find me. Nothing at all. So they finally went. They couldn't find out whether they were going to dynamite the station or not, and the pickets had a big laugh about it. I had a good time with them. Well, that night, this was in along about 10 o'clock in the morning. And that afternoon there, I don't know, we're getting towards night. The county sheriff come up, and he had this newspaper man with him, see. And, of course, there I was a pretty good friend of the sheriff anyway, and he went looking around to see where I was, and my wife told him that I'd got out around then, you know, and my wife told him where I was, and they come out, and the sheriff wanted to show him the people, what good friends we was. He says, I want to shake hands with you, he says, and have a picture in the paper. So, geez, I shook hands with the sheriff there, you know, and they took our picture. The next morning, I got the clipping of it down home, I can show you. The next morning, there was my picture standing out there with my arms folded, and I was the rebel of Madison County. Now, that's your trick photography or some damn thing, or trick finishing it up or something. Now, here I stood shaking hands with him like that, and by the end, when the picture came out in the paper, I stood there with my arms folded.
God almighty.
Huh? Yes, you... that's the way they trick a lot of them fellas, you know.
Oh?
Sure, that's the way they trick them. Sure.
Well, now,
used to get his call.
Oh, the sheriff wasn't... He wasn't responsible for it.
Well, I don't know whether he was or wasn't. The paper probably was.
He's a friend of yours.
Yeah. But, you know, he used to call me up every morning about 10:30 and tell me where to go get the boys. They'd been pinched for dumping milk and one thing and another, and they had him in jail.
Yeah.
Jeez, I used to have to chase after them boys and get them bailed out. We had two fellows there that was in every day. Why, they'd rather dump milk than to eat.
You hear that right?
I was in one milk station one time. They've been in there ahead of me and dumping milk. Nice deep all over the floor right there. They're going right out the drain.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. And I've loaded in the car with them fellows, you know, and you know, milk after it gets onto you there, it smells sweet and sickish. Oh, it's the sickest smelling stuff when the sun shines onto it.
When it dries up.
Yeah. Well, them fellows there. Now, some of the things that them boys done, it's, you know, almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, the Dermans League was bound to run the milk can. And we was bound to stop it. There was one morning, the milk train pulled out. And when the milk train pulled out, these boys boarded it. And they had a rope. They went up and they tied it onto the catwalk. Over there and let it down over the doors and opened the doggone doors, and when they got down to the next station 20 miles, they'd been in there and dumped the milk. Now that's almost unbelievable, but that's what they done.
Yeah.
And I had to get them out of jail.
Yeah.
That was a pretty exciting time, Mr. Eaton. Yes, sir.
There'd be a comical side to it. Like one time we was, there was a bunch of pickets to a place, and they was trying to run the milk in there, and there was two women. Sometimes the women would try to run it in, you know. They think that they could get away with it quicker than the man could.
Yeah.
Get by with it. The two women in a station wagon, they come down and they slowed up just as if they were going to turn in there at the milk station, you know. And there were two young fellas run out, and they was, you know, they thought they was something. One of them run out, and he opened up the door on this car, and he said to the woman, "Where's your milk?" She said, "We're not producing milk at this time." She said, "We're both perfectly dry. There were two women in there." Jesus, you know, give it up. I thought that fellow to fell down.
Well, now, did the women know what they was up to?
Yeah. Oh, gee, you'd get a heck of a crowd out, you know, watching.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the women knew what was going on.
Yeah. Truckload of milk. Well, he had yeah, we ought to get some warm water there pretty soon. He'd come with one load of milk. He used to draw two loads. One to a cooperative and the other to the Dairyman's League. He'd come with one load of milk, and I went on to talk with him, and I told him to take it back to the farmers. And he done it. He went right straight around to the Dairyman's League fellows and picked up a load of milk and brought in. The Dairyman's League plant was right just plumb across the road from where the other plant was. And where they got their rotten eggs from, I never knew. But boy, you never see so many rotten eggs fly in your life.
Yeah.
By either they hit that fella, you know. The window was down on his cab, and one of them went in there, and it hit him right here, side of the head somewhere, and he jumped like that, and just he jumped, another one hit him right here. And I was right where I could see him, and stink, oh, yeah. And they peppered them cans of milk, see, with all them rotten eggs. Oh, the damn stink you ever see. He went over there to the station, and you know they washed and scrubbed them cans on the outside, and they finally took it all in, and that was part of the milk that the boys dumped down the road on the side of the car.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, I see a bunch of that stuff.
How long did that last?
Oh, a week, 10 days. Sometimes it wouldn't last that long.
Yeah.
Well, then, I was to one place there when they was trying to stop the milk going in. There was a fella pulled in there with a big load of milk. And he had about a dozen fellas standing on top of it, you know, and they was swinging peck handles and every other stick and anything they could get, you know. And so they was running some of the milk in, and the fella that... a deputy sheriff was standing right side of me talking to me.
Yeah.
And the crowd kept pushing up, you know, and geez, they pushed us up pretty darn close to that truck. And there was a fellow running a restaurant up there, and he was all dolled up and had a white shirt on, you know, and it was undone here and kind of loose in the back of his neck. Fellow on the truck, he took a can cover right off in there, and he just took that can of milk right up and he poured it right over that fellow's head. The milk was running right down his pants, running right out of his pant leg down on the bottom where it went right down his neck, you know. The old sheriff grabbed me, and he says, "All right," he says, "that's his milk he's dumping." Well, I've been wet with that milk so that...
I never had experience with any milk like that drying on you.
Oh, yeah.
No, never did.
Big milk meeting. One night, up in Watertown, New York. I was up there. Chuck let it be the main speaker. And I was going all around different places. And one of the head ones of the state organization was there. Jerry Loomis, his name was. And the last thing that I said to Jerry, I said, "Jerry, if I get in jail, will you come down and bail me out?" "No, sir," he says. "If you don't know any more than keep out of jail," he says, "you can stay there." Well, they all got a big laugh about it, you know. They was 15, 20 of us went down to the restaurant to have coffee and donuts before we went home, see, because I was about 150 miles from home. I just got home. I hadn't been home 15 minutes, I don't believe, the telephone rung. The Syracuse paper called. Wanted to know if I'd got home, and I said, "Yes, this is me talking." He said, "Did you know Jerry Loomis is dead?" I said, "No, what are you talking about?" "Well," he says, "he is." "Well, geez," I says, "I was up there tonight talking with him just a short time ago." "Yeah," he says, "we know it." He says, "That's the reason we called you." He says, "He went home from the restaurant where you fellas had your supper. He told his wife," he says, "in a few minutes," he says, I want a cup of coffee," he says, "before I go to bed. But," he says, "I feel kind of funny. I'm going in and lay down." He went in and laid down, and that was it. Had a heart attack hit him. Way it goes. The paper used to be awful good, boy. They'd call up and tell you everything that went on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They
most of it I knew ahead of time, but they'd call me just the same.
Yeah. Did you have regular fellas on the newspaper who covered it, you might say?
Well, we didn't know, but the newspapers there had their fellas, you know, that was... It's just like checking every other thing. When there's anything comes up, boy, they've got a man there in a hurry.
Yeah.
You take all of this strikes and one thing another now, you know, there's somebody here. The same way with them university strikes up there. I don't believe in that stuff.
Oh, Lord. never saw anything like that.
Mr. Eastman was talking about these milk strikes they used to have. Now, he don't want to go over all that. He's just talking about that. Back in the 20s?
Well, no, the
30s,
36 to 40, I've been in. And then in 41, they were going to have another strike, and they come and wanted me to head it, and I said, no, I've had all I wanted of it.
Well, you could have headed it.
Yeah, I didn't want it.
Let them do the legwork.
I knew what to do if I got into it. And I'm going to tell you, the minute something like that starts, the thing to do is keep your milk right to home and keep your mouth shut.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
Just not get out in the
on
the road.
Right in. Just keep still and let them go.
Well, I guess I'm...
Same way with all of these strikes. You take these railroad strikes. They go out, it gives them an excuse to get out and raise hell and tear things all to pieces. We had some of them just like that in the milk strike, you know. That's just what they wanted to get into, something like that.
Yeah. They're looking for a little excitement?
Yeah.
Well, that's the kind you need.
Had another county over there that had a Polish descent fellow. Was in as the county chairman. Boy, I used to get calls to get over there and quiet him down.
Oh, really?
He was too radical, you know.
Yeah. You had a right good number of Polish people around there. I remember you talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that was in the 30s.
36 to 40 is when I was in the head of it.
Well, Eastman, I never had any experience at all like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, sir.
You don't know what you missed.
Well, I see. Yeah. And I never run around anybody who has had. You know, just plain dire experience. If they have, I didn't hear about it, you know.
One of the times up there, I was supposed to have been putting a new roof on the milk station. See, I was a maintenance man for the milk station. Well, they heard that I was in on the strike business and going to call a strike. So they had the roofing up there. And they hired another fellow to come up there and put it on. Well, there was a bunch of pickets down in my place. And I says to them, how quick them fellows would get down off the roof up there if somebody called their wife, called his wife, told him we were going to dynamite the station. Jesus, you know, that story spread that they were going to dynamite the station there. And first thing I knew, there was a dozen cars of troopers went up by my place. See, it was about 7 miles down to troopers' barracks from where I lived.
Yeah.
And they come a-tearing up there, and they went up to the milk station. And I'm thinking, boy, now they're going to be looking for me when they come back. So I went down in my cellar. I had a bunch of apple barrels down there, and oh, there was about a dozen of sugar barrels. Well, you know, these sugar barrels are bigger. They're about that big around.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, they are. They're about that big around, you know. But they wasn't any higher than the apple barrels. But, you know, I went right over there in that barrel, and I picked one of them sugar barrels up to the bottom side up, and I raised it right up, and I just sat right down just like this, and that damn barrel was right over my head.
Yeah.
I sat right there, and them troopers, they come down and saw her, and they looked all around there. They bumped over, and they bumped against the barrel that I was in there once. I never let out a peep, and boy, they hung around there for about an hour, and then they went. They couldn't find me. God, they said, as funny as cars here and the truck is here. Did he go with somebody else? Nobody knew where I was, which is a good thing. I didn't say nothing to anybody where I was going when I went down and got in the barrel.
I don't know how you stayed in that barrel that long, Miss Eason. My leg wouldn't put up with that.
Kind of cramped, but just the sugar barrel was just that much bigger than an apple barrel you can get into like that.
Yeah.
Uh huh. then could you come on out later? Then you came on out later?
After they'd all gone, I knew they was gone. I come up out of there. And then that night, this was just before dinner. And that night, or that afternoon, the sheriff come up. He was a pretty good friend of mine. The newspaper man was with him. And they wanted to get a picture of me shaking hands with the sheriff. So I stood out there and shook hands with the sheriff, and they took the picture. Jesus, the next morning the picture had come out in the paper, but it was me standing there alone with my arms folded, and I was the rebel of Madison County.
How about that,
please? Why, Mr. Eastman?
I got the picture. I can show it to you down there.
I'd like to see it sometime. No, sir, I never had any experience like that. I don't know. I guess maybe a fellow ought to have some experience like that. Well, now, you appreciate more what these fellas do on strikes and all like that, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
What goes on?
Go on and go through all of that there and get maybe 10, 15, 20 cents raise in the price of milk.
Yeah.
Throw away thousands of dollars worth of it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another funny thing that happened. They used to try to do. They'd do anything they could, you know, to run the milk. And there was four of them big tankers, you know, with bad milk in, and they claimed it was skim milk. Well, the first two that we sampled was skim milk. But the other two was whole milk, see, and headed right for New York City. So the boys opened the spigots and dumped all four of them right down the streets in town of Madison. And it's a little village, and it run right straight down, run into a fellow's cellar. And my brother lived in Madison, and he was the fire chief there. And they went and got him out of bed in the middle of the night to get the fire engine out to pump the water out or pump the milk out of the fellow's cellar.
Ah, in the world.
Yes, sir.
I know, well, getting the cellar,
Missy. It run right down the ditch, and there was so much of it there that it just run right off from the edge of the road and run right down into his cellar.
Yeah.
Just like, to be just like a...
Oh, I see.
A freshet of rain.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
I was cellar full of milk.
Yeah.
Why, that... Yeah, them big old trucks hold
a lot
of milk.
Well, there were four of them tankers.
Ready to go to New York City.
Mm-hmm. There was another time that the pickets brought a fellow to me. There was a truck driver, and he had a truckload of cream. He took it out of Syracuse, started for New York with it. He got down into another county, I don't know yet. Never did understand how the heck my pickets got a hold of that guy. Because they dumped part of that cream right out right into a little river. And the fellow agreed to take it back where he got it from if they wouldn't spill any more of it, see? So they brought him to me and wanted to know if it's all right to let him go, to let that milk go back, let that cream go back. And I said, yes. And so I said, you wait a minute. So I called the troopers and told them what there was to it and that I wanted a trooper escort for that certain load of cream. So Jesus, they went down there and they escorted him clear back into Syracuse for that load of cream. Now, he didn't have one about a half a load. They dumped it.
I'll be
dead,
brother.
Boy, I've been through a lot of it.
Well, now, who were your friends, Mr. Eastman? Who were your buddies?
Up there?
Yeah.
All the farmers.
Yeah. You work together, some of them.
Yeah. They tried their darnest to get me in as the president of the milk cooperative up there.
Yeah.
I didn't want that. I just turned that down.
Well, now, was the cooperative behind the strike?
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you be?
Well, I'll tell you just why I didn't want nothing to do with it. I was producing milk and sending it to the co-op as far as that goes. But the milk companies, you see, they passed a law that the milk companies had to pay the producers according to the market that they had for it. You get what I mean? The fluid market was considered the best. Well, then the milk that went into ice cream was next, and then butter, and then cheese. Well, this milk company, they had one of the best fluid markets that there was in New York, see, and about every drop of the milk was going in the fluid market.
Yeah.
Well, they had to pay us a pretty good price. Well, they didn't like that, so they got them to form a co-op to rent the station, see, and then they were taking so much out of their checks for station expenses and everything, and geez, I could see just what they was to it. They were going to make the co-op fix that station right up into A1 condition, and then they were just going to take it back. You see what I mean? They were going to make the farmers put that station right up into A1 condition. See, then they were just ready to take it back. Well, they made that work. Well, then they turned around another dirty thing that they'd done. The Keystone Dairies was called a mop-up of the National Dairies. See, the National Dairies consisted of 212 separate companies that was combined to make the National Dairies. Well, this Keystone Dairies was what they called a mop-up. Well, any station that the National Dairies got mad at, they turned around and ran it to the Keystone. The Keystone would just come right in there and skim the milk and for butter, you know, and they'd pay the farmer just a butter price. Well, then they turn around, you know, and they take that skimmed milk. Now you take all of that powdered milk that you buy that's put out by the Carnation and all of that. The farmers don't get a nickel out of that.
Really?
That's all clear profit for the Carnation Milk Company. They pay the farmers just the price of butter. See, and all that skimmed milk in the same way with the cheese. The milk is put into the cheese.
Yeah.
It's all the farmers don't get nothing out of that skimmed milk. They're out of the whey. And that whey butter, did you ever eat any whey butter?
Yeah.
You know, that stuff is worth better than $1 a pound. Now, whey butter, that's calculated to be the very top notch that there is in the butter line.
And the farmers don't get anything for that?
No. That comes out of the cheese milk. You see, I don't know, maybe you don't know how they make that cheese. But
no.
The cheese, huh?
No, I don't.
Huh? Well, they take that whole milk and it goes into these big vats, see? Well, then it's het up. These vats are made with a steam, hot water pocket underneath them, see? And it cooks that milk, you know? The milk all curdles in there, and then you take them, they've got these cutters, you know, and screens. One set goes this way up to cut it that way, and the other set goes this way, see? And it cuts into half-inch squares. And it cuts that, and as it cooks, you know, and they put the coloring in it, and it cooks it all down, you know, and then when it gets all curdled just right, well, then they take and put a strainer right down over the outlet of it, you know, and open up the outlet, see, and that whey all runs out. See, well, that whey runs over there into a big vat. Well, then it's run out of that vat right through a cream separator. and they get the whey cream. And the whey cream is churned in the butter. And that whey, after it's run through the separator and gets what cream there is left in it off, that goes out, and they run that in the powdered whey to feed the hogs and calves. Some of it, and then some of it goes into making buttons.
Well, how come you ever get out of the dairy business, Mr. Eastman, as much as you knew about it?
Well, I tell you, my wife knew more about the dairy business than I did, or she thought she did, and she was always arguing and one thing or another, and I said, I'll do something that I ain't got somebody on my neck all the while.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mr. Eastman.
Before
you got into something that a woman certainly doesn't know.
Well, when did you do all that maintenance work there at that boys' camp?
From 38 to 58.
Well, that later.
I was over there 20 years.
Well, now you didn't do that full time.
Huh? No. That just worked right in, just the same as working here today and someplace else tomorrow.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh.
I see.
Then you see when I had building to do over there, well, then I'd hire some extra help and go over and do the building over there.
You just about died there once. When was that?
A number of times.
When was that, Mr. Eastman? That was...
What do you mean, when I had the gallbladder business?
Yes.
Oh, that was about 3 years ago.
No, back before that.
Huh?
I hadn't heard about the gallbladder business.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was before. That's up yonder. Why are you still up there?
Oh, I got hit on the head?
Yes.
Yeah, just got my head all opened up here, and that's the reason I don't know anything anymore. They took me to the hospital there and thought I was dead. When I come to, the doctor was sewing up my head, you know. And
yeah.
He says, one good thing about it, we didn't have to shave his head, he said, before we sewed it up. Well, I said, gee, never mind my head, do something about my back. And he said, if we don't stop this blood, he said, you won't be needing any back.
You know, that wasn't it. I had the pictures come to me, but I can't get it. You were sick there for a long time. You had blood pressure.
Oh, I had a heart attack.
Heart attack, and kept right on going.
Yeah.
When was that?
Let me see, that was 47.
Oh, Lord, I don't see how you did that.
I had a contract to remodel the grade school. $40,000, and we had a lot of work to do there, and I had to hire two.
Yeah.
We run two sets of help there, two shifts.
Yeah.
And I worked both shifts in order to keep their public money good.
Oh, that was right after the war.
Yeah.
During the war.
Just after it.
47, yeah.
Just after the war.
Yeah.
And my wife had asthma. And I'd hear the telephone ring, and I'd run and answer the telephone there at the school, you know, and all I'd hear was, all right, I'll be there in a minute. Jesus, I lived about a block and a half away from the school, and I'd run like the devil down there and give her a shot of adrenaline and bring her out of that, and then I'd get back to work. Well, I worked two shifts like that for a couple months.
Yeah.
Jesus, all at once one day, we had raised the boiler up to put a stoker under it.
Yeah.
And I had to put in a return pump down there to suck the water back, to push it into the boiler, because the boiler was just high enough so that it wouldn't run in by itself. They used to have what they called a steam lung on it.
Yeah.
You know, that was a steam lung, had a float in it, And when the water got just so high in that, well, then that would open up and let that water back into the boiler, see? Well, that wouldn't work when we raised the boiler up 18 inches to put the stoker under it. So we were piping that, and I had a length of 2.5-inch pipe, and I'd got to turn it around. The coupling was on the wrong end of it. So I opened up the cellar window and hooked it up. I run that pipe out the window.
2-inch pipe.
2.5, and turned it around. I laid it back down where I wanted it, and I reached up to unhook that cellar window. Going to shut it, you know, and Jesus, I went right down in a heap and right in a bunch of paint pails and tin cans and there, all that stuff, and said, Jesus, I couldn't get up.
Yeah.
I was just there.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus, I rolled around down the floor and got over to the stairs and I crawled up the stairs. I told my brother he was helping me. He was one of them. There were 4 or 5 other fellows down the cellar there working too. I said, geez, I'm going down to the doctor's office. Well, what's the matter? I said, I don't know, I feel funny. So I crawled up and I crawled out on my hands and knees and got in the truck and went down to the doctor's office.
Drove yourself?
I drove it up and drove it down. I got down there and I got in the office and I started coughing. And all there was about a dozen of them in the waiting room. And I coughed, and all at once the doctor opened up the door and he came out and says, who's doing that coughing out here? I said, he is. The doc came over and he gave me one look. He went back in the office and he came out with some nitroglycerine tablets and said, put 2 of these right under your tongue, he said. So I put them under my tongue and he went back in the office and was in there about 5 minutes and he came out with the fellow that was in there. He says to these other ones, he says, I want him in the office right off. He says, check him over. He says, he's had a heart attack. He says, I can tell by the looks of him. Well, I got up and tried to get in there, and Jesus, they had to help me in the office. I couldn't move. I got in there, and Doc said, how'd you get down here? I said, in my truck. Did you drive your truck down here? Yep. He says, is your brother working up there? And yes, I says, 2 of them. Well, why in the devil didn't you have them bring you down? Oh, I says, I got down here by myself. Oh, he called up there and had them come down, and Jesus, they got me, you know, and they took me down home. And I lived upstairs over the shop, and Jesus, they carried me up and put me to bed. The doc see them patients that was in there, and then he come down. He give me a couple of shots while I was there. Oh, he come down. He says, you keep this fella right perfectly quiet, he said. Don't you let him move for nothing. Don't you let him get out of bed. So he came down for a couple of days, and I was in there all right. The third day, I made up my mind that I was going to get up and get dressed. So I got up and got my clothes on. Rap comes to the door, and I started for the door and says, Doc. He gave me one look and he said, what in the devil are you doing up here? I said, Doc, I made up my mind if I was going to die, I was going to die with my shoes on. He says, if a fellow won't do as I tell him to, he says, I'm not going to doctor him. And he turned right around and went back to the office. Jesus, that left me without any doctor at all, you know. I went along 2 or 3 days and I had my brother take me down to the city. We went in down there and I doctored with 6 different doctors. I couldn't walk. Well, I could get out and drive a car and be all right, you know, but geez, I couldn't walk a city block if they paid you for it. I'd get down to the city and I'd take a newspaper. I'd walk as far as I could go and I'd just step over to the curb and put the paper down and sit on it. People would come along, you know, and they'd look at me just much to say, look at that drunken pup sitting there. You know, I didn't care what they thought. It didn't make any difference. I'd done gone just as far as I can go, and that's what I'd done. Sometimes I'd have to make 3 or 4 stops before I'd get a block up to where I wanted to go. And finally, there was another woman in town. She'd had a heart attack. This doctor that was in there, he didn't go too good in that village. So we went over to another village and started up. And my gosh, you know, they think he's got almighty over there. Well, there was So then there was an old Czechoslovakia doctor come into town. He rented the house off from this woman that had the other heart attack, and he went doctoring her, and he golly helped her and put her on her feet and got her going good. She called me on the telephone one day and said, "I wish you'd go down and see Doc Feldman." She says, "He's helped me wonderful," she says, "and I think maybe he could help you." So I went down, got in the office there, and I told him what Mrs. Foster told me. "Yeah," he says, "she's a lot better." He says, "She's a lot better." And I said, "Well," I said, "you helped her." He says, can you help me?" "I don't know. I don't know," he says. "I'll look you over." So Jesus, he had an x-ray, and he x-rayed me from head to toe, and the fluoroscope, and he looked me all over with that, and they put me on the table, and his wife was a doctor too, but she didn't have a license at that time, but she worked with him. See, they come over here from Czechoslovakia, and they have to go through a New York proceeding down there, and work so long in the hospital down there, and then take an examination before they can get a license to go out and work. And so they checked me all over with a cardiogram, one thing another, you know, and he took that ticker tape there, and he studied that, and he went and he got his book. And he got comparing, you know, the diagrams in the book with what the ticker tape said. And finally he says, "Well, now I tells you." And he says, "And I tells you in plain English. If I can get the medicine that they make in the old country," he says, "I can help you." He says, "If I can't get it," he says, "I don't know." He says, "I will write right over there tonight," he says, "and see if I can get it." Well, I says, "All right." I says, "How much do I owe you?" He says, "You wait till we see." So it run along pretty near 2 weeks. The telephone rung. I answered the telephone. He says, "I got it, I got it, I got it, I got it, I got it." I said, "Wait a minute, you got what?" "Oh," he said, "this is Dr. Feldman." He says, "I got that medicine for you." But he was so excited that he'd got that, you know, that I suppose, you know, the German of it, the Czechoslovakians talk German, you know. I said, that, you know, the German is different, see, than what I know. I studied German in high school, and you probably took a lot of it. And he was so excited, so I went down and I got it, and he told me how to take it, one thing and another, and he kept getting it for me, and by God, you know, it wasn't a week before I could walk and go pretty good. Yes. And before I got that, there was one winter up there, we had quite a lot of snow. And I had a 3-car garage out back of the shop, and the roof went up like this, and you drove in here, see, that was long this way, and the car went in the short way of it, seeing the roof run along. Well, the snow fell off, slid off in the roof, it had a metal roof on it. Jesus, it was about that deep right in front of the door, see? So I says to myself, "I'll go out and I'll take out 4 shovels full of snow.
I gave it to
him."
And then I'll come back in and rest up a few minutes in the shop. By and by, I'll go out and take out 4 more shovels. And need it after a little bit, I'll have that so I can get the car out. The shop was set right tight to the road, so that I could back open up the shop doors, and
yeah.
I kept the truck in the shop, see, and I could back the truck out and get the truck out about any time without much shoveling at all. But that set back. So I took out the 4 shovels for them. Didn't hurt me any. And I went back in the shop and done a little tinkering down there. I always had tinkering down in the shop to do anyway, or some kind of electrical, or somebody bring in some appliance and wanted to fix it or something. I was in there about a half an hour, and I went out. I took, cut out the 4 shovel full of snow, you know. I took 2 of them and threw them out of the way. I reached over for the 3rd one. Jesus, I went right down on my hands and knees, and I couldn't get back on my feet. So, Jesus, I rolled over to the back steps and went up into the shop. There was a platform there, 10 feet wide, and it was up about that high. And then there was four steps that went up on the end of it. I crawled up on the steps and I went back in the shop and I said, "But Jesus, the fellow that put that snow there can take it away." And I got done shoveling the snow right there. But they claimed, I told the doctor about it, and he says, you know, it isn't so much the shoveling the snow, it's the vapor that you suck in off in that snow is what affects you.
Oh.
That cold vapor that comes off in that snow, they say that that's what affects them. And you take these fellows that have heart attacks shoveling snow,
uh-huh.
That's what causes it. When they get enough of that vapor into their lungs, that's what causes the heart attack.
So you didn't shovel any more snow?
No, I got all the snow.
Well, Mr. Eastman, you've been you just pushed your luck in your time.
I guess so. One of these times I'm going to push it much too much.
Yeah. Do you still do that?
I still hobble around. I was working on a place down here, and well, over to Irwin. The cellar, the kitchen floor was all gone, you know, and we tore it all up. Termites had done it all up, putting all new floor joists and new flooring in. And I was crawling around under the house, saying one thing and another. And the fella says to me, he said, "How old are you anyway?" This was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I says, "I'm 68. He said, "No, you ain't." Oh, I said, "I am." "Why," he says, "I'm 15 years younger than you." And I says, "I can't crawl around under there like that." "Well," I said, "there's a difference between you and I." "You never had it to do." And I said, "And I always have."
Who was that?
That was Ray.
I wouldn't know him.
You know, the name left me just like
I wouldn't
that.
Know him. Yeah.
He's a great Christian church fella. Comes down here to Orange Lake to the Christian church.
Oh.
Oh, heck, he got a short name.
I wouldn't know him. I don't know anybody down there much.
But you just grew up knowing how to do that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what place it was on. Do you know where the Steinbergen ranch is?
No.
Old Irwin?
No.
Well, it's on that road between Irwin and Flemington.
Yeah. You don't know the man that runs that grocery store and postmaster there at Irwin, do you?
No, I don't know the man that runs it. I know the man that owns it.
Who's that? Edwards?
Edward owned it.
Yeah. Well, I seen the man that owned it, that runs it, and he's a right innocent fella, but I don't know him. Like Johnny Palmer, you know, he picked up a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of fellas like you and John Palmer, y'all have picked up so much, you know. These young fellas ought to be working with you and picking up some of that, you know, passing on some of that. Let me tell you, Nick works with horses. But he never worked with them like you did. You was up here one day and had to leave about dinner time. And you had some horses on your mind that you'd going to tell about. And I can't recall it, but it's some of the nice horses that you had.
I had a pair of Morgans.
Yeah.
It was about the nicest damn horses that I ever drove in my life.
Yeah.
I never touched one of them with a whip in the world. And boy, any time that I asked them to draw, now they was ready to draw. And you know, there'd be times, we'd ride the milk in them days with a team of horses on a light number wagon. They were also light sleighs. And some of the mornings, you know, the cold mornings, them horses, I always fed them good, you know, and they felt good. They'd want to play. Jesus, I'd let them go, you know, and if they wanted to jump and run, why, I'd just let them jump and run.
Yeah.
Why, there's been times, you know, that people would call my wife and tell them how I was a-licking them horses and one thing and another, and I never laid a whip on them in the world, you know. I if they wanted to jump and run, I just let them jump and run, you know. Let them go.
Yeah.
Well, them horses thought as much of me as I did of them.
Well, now, horses have got a lot of play in them, anyhow, haven't they?
Yeah.
Morgan.
Yes. And they'd thank you for it if you let them give it a rain.
We used to draw ice in the winter, you know. And I'd draw more ice. I'd get there in the morning and get the first load. And the last load at night. That would give me more ice than any man on the job drawing ice, see. But that little pair of horses, boy, now when I'd get a load of ice on, they just walked it right off.
Yeah.
And you know, a Morgan horse is a horse that walks right along. They don't mope along. They just walk right along, you know.
Yeah.
See, and I'd walk that ice right along.
Yeah.
And we'd get up to the station, up to the milk station, and they had quite a hill up just before we got to the station there. There's another fella had a big pair of horses. He was drawing maybe a couple of cakes more than I was on the load. See, but my extra load was more than offset. Pulled up there, and we had a hitch team, a tow team, see, that had come down, and they just kept going up and down the hill there, you know, hooking on and towing the team up, and then towing another load up, see, up the hill. And this fella pulled up right behind me, and he was a little bit mad because I was drawing more ice than they was. Going up the hill, he said, what the hell are you waiting for? I said, by God, if you can draw your load up the hill, I can too. He said, you get out of my way and I'll show you. I pulled right over to the side, and he tried to go up the hill, and he couldn't make it. I said, now you get off in the road and I'll show you how I can go up. All right, I pulled right up, and when I was going to stop him, I'd swing the horses. You see that there, it held it.
Yeah.
Pulled my bobs around like that and held it. All right, and then when they'd start like that, you know, and go, and to take it along. I went on up on my load. The other fellas couldn't go.
Well, now,
that's what your Morgan horses would do.
Yeah. Well, now, say that again.
Part
of it now. I wasn't just horses. Part of it was you knowing how to handle them.
But you know, you're taking go up like this and you're taking turn your horses off like that, and your bobs would be dragging sideways, see, and that would hold your load.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I mean?
No, sir.
Huh?
No.
Well, your load wouldn't slide back down the hill because that one bob was right sideways.
Oh, you mean you'd go zigzag up the hill?
Yeah, you zigzag it. See, turn it. Well, when you get up there, when you go to stop, you turn your team.
Uh-huh.
You turn your team, see, just your front bob.
Yeah.
See, and that front bob was turned, see, and that'd hold it.
Yeah.
All right, well, then when you go to start, you start them ahead a little bit like that and turn like that.
Uh-huh.
And you see this back bob here, you see you was pulling that at an advantage to get it started.
Uh-huh.
You see when you start?
Well, you didn't make it all in one pull.
Oh, you know, we had to stop four or five times going up there.
Yeah.
It was icy.
Yeah.
It was icy.
Yeah. Yeah. Get up there.
I see. So
there's
no one
how. Yeah. It's quite a little grade. There was one old farmer up there one time. He had an old horse, just about like this old white horse that they loaded out here.
Yeah.
And he didn't have too much milk. I think he had about 3 milk cans. And he had them in an old buggy, you know. And then if the old horse would wobble too much, or he'd get out and walk going up the hill. So the old horse get up there. Got up top of the hill and went to go into the milk station. And the old horse like that and fell dead in a knit right in the road.
Good Lord.
The old fellow said, "Geez, that's another one of her damn tricks." But he says she never done that before. Yes, she was. I was just right behind him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The old horse, he wiggled like the old hare to get that load of milk up that hill, you know, and he got right up on the flat.
Yeah.
Dropped dead in a knit right in the road.
Mm-hmm.
But you worked with horses a good whole lot, then, haven't you?
You'd rather have a Morgan than anything?
I would for me. I had some doggone nice, but I can't think of the name of them now. I had a nice pair of chestnuts with a white man tail. Boy, they was a nice pair.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather had that pair of Morgans than any horses I ever owned. And I've had some good ones.
Mm-hmm. What's the latest you had horses that you worked?
Around, 44, 45.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. What'd you do with them then?
I had an auction, sold them.
What was you working them at then?
On the farm. We had three farms up there. I figured that I hadn't money enough saved up that I wouldn't have to work in my old age.
Mm-hmm.
My first wife stole it all.
Yeah, she...
Yes, sir, I had it in joint account, and I was down here to Florida one winter. She wouldn't come because she didn't like it down here. And I got back home, and I didn't have a nickel. Only what I had in the shop. I had the shop, and that was in my name, and she couldn't touch that.
Yeah.
But she had sold a lot of stuff out of it.
Oh?
Yeah. Water pumps, and there was one kitchen sink and cabinet. And
good Lord. You mean even just
two, three water pumps and all that stuff. Everything that she could sell, boy, she sold.
Done anything like
she sold two of the farms. The other one she couldn't touch.
Yeah.
Because that was in my name. She'd have sold that if she could have got anybody to buy it.
Yeah. Oh, part of it was in her name.
No, part of it was a joint account. And anything in joint account like that, geez, they can take off and walk off with it.
I didn't know that.
Well, I thought both had to sign for it. Well, anyway. Yeah.
She done it, so
anyway, she got them, didn't she?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what brought you down here, but I sure am glad you got down here and fixed my water tank.
Well, let's see.
And other things that you've done.
In a few minutes, that water ought to begin to get warm.
Yeah. Well, it's just right for Saturday night.
That's right. Well, now, I took a bath last night. Jeez. Boy, I was soaked last night. It was hot yesterday, and I was working in the place and doing quite a little wiring and one thing and another, and I had to get up in the attic.
Yeah.
And boy, I'm telling you now, there was a hot place.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Oh, you couldn't hardly breathe up there.
Yeah. This time of year.
And there was one of those louvers in each end of the building.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't believe that them doggone things do much good.
Not on a hot day.
Huh?
I don't imagine they do.
I've just got the stinking idea that if a fella had a ventilator right on the peak,
yeah,
to do three times as much good as one of them ventilator or them louvers in the end. Because
yeah,
your heat goes up, you know,
yeah,
like that, see? And if you had a ventilator up in the middle, it'd go right up out. Of course, the house wouldn't look as good with a ventilator on like that, but...
Makes more sense.
Well... That'd be worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, you get up in one of these houses like that, you know, even if you got a fan in there, you still got a whole lot of hot air caught up there, Captain. It can't move.
It seems to be dead right in there.
Dead air.
Stays right there.
It won't move. Once it gets hot like that, it just won't move.
Do you understand all about the here?
Yes.
Yeah. Please tell you all about it?
Yeah.
Here's the paper that goes with it.
You got your glasses, Faye.
Okay. He'll just leave it there.
Yeah. If I had one.
I think there's one here.
You think up some good stories about Mr. Palmer. I don't mean stories, but I mean, you know, things he's done. I don't see him. I'd love to see him, you know. Run into him.
He's a good guy, Johnny Palmer is. I gotta have a white sheet of paper to see that.
As a...
Yeah.
Back of it's white.
You see what they...
Now, for a long time on the tape, Mr. Eastman's collecting his fixtures that he doesn't use, and he's going to set them down on a piece of paper and give me credit for it. While he does that, we set the table and make conversation.
See, you take them doggone. I try to read it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, see, but you lay it on a piece of white paper.
Oh, I see, and that does it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He gets up and steps off the wire to get the length of it. He put in. He put in a number 10 in the place of the number 12 that Willie had in there. Well, he's about ready to close his books. I wrote him a check for the wrong amount, and so Faye tried it and got it better. He just charged $15, and I thought he was giving me credit for about $15 worth, and I thought I was supposed to pay him for that, so I wrote it for $30. He said that was way on it too much. And he knows I generally pay him a little more than he asked. Now, Faye has asked what it is, Mr. Eastman, why it is you like a Morgan horse, and there's not enough room on this tape. So this is the end of this reel, Mr. Eastman's first reel, channel 2 over, the end of channel 2 over, the end of this whole reel. The Saturday, the 16th of August, 69, when Mr. Eastman put in the new water heater. August the 16th of August, Saturday the 16th of August, 69, when Mr. Eastman put in the new water heater. And that's the end of this reel and the end of channel 2 over. And on Saturday, the 16th of August, when Mr. Eastman put in this new water heater.